88.3 Southern FM.
Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, John Glenn. Yes, it's just gone 60 years since America's first orbital manned spaceflight. And no, this is not a repeat of our last week's program. It's just an addition to our program when we celebrated the 60th anniversary. Well, on Sunday, the astronauts aboard the International Space Station had this to say.
Greetings from the International Space Station. I'm NASA astronaut Mark Vandehei, along with my crewmates, NASA astronauts Kayla Barron, Raja Chari, and Tom Marshburn. 60 years ago, on February 20th, 1962, one of the original Mercury astronauts, John Glenn, blazed a trail into the history books by launching on the Mercury Atlas 6 mission aboard the Friendship 7 capsule to become the first American to orbit the Earth.
Glenn's mission spanned just three orbits of the Earth in less than 5 hours, but it accomplished three critical goals: to place a piloted spacecraft into orbital flight around the Earth, to observe human performance in such conditions, and to recover the human and the spacecraft safely back to Earth.
The flights of Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom on suborbital missions in 1961 proved a launch capability. But questions remained as to whether the human body could withstand longer periods of weightlessness. John Glenn's pioneering mission erased those doubts.
And in celebration of Black History Month, the Friendship 7 mission highlights another giant in NASA's history, Katherine Johnson. Due to the complexity of the flight and his wariness of leaving intricate mathematical equations up to machines, Glenn personally asked Johnson to run the orbital trajectory calculations for Friendship 7.
All of us aboard the International Space Station want to honor John Glenn today for his remarkable achievements in both 1962 and his return to space aboard the Shuttle Discovery in 1998, as well as his distinguished career in the U.S. Senate. Because of him, we are heading back to the moon and on to Mars and beyond.
On last week's The Space Show, we were celebrating the 60th anniversary of that flight by John Glenn aboard the Mercury Atlas 6, three orbits around the Earth. Well, on Friday morning, I got an email which had been sent on Wednesday morning, and it was offering me a world premiere of an Australian song about John Glenn. But unfortunately, as I said, I didn't get the email until Friday because it had to be forwarded through several people. So we're going to hear that song now, and then we're going to speak to the musician who wrote the song and hear all about it. So here we go. It's called Splashdown John Glenn, and it's by HR Arts Factory.
Roger, we have you on that. We'll give you the countdown for retro sequence time, John. You're looking good.
Friendship 7 to Capcom, over. Telemetry is on, over. Cabin pressure is 5.5. I see Aries and Triangulum drifting out of orbit, bringing it back in, switching to fly by wire. Getting hot up here, over. John Glenn. Ocean, splash down.
would you shoot? Still open,
so handsome in your silver suit, with your medal of the Flying Cross and the Order of the Aliens. Hope you're still up there, John, watching over us. Ship 7 to Capcom, over. Icy Pleiades, now, over. A bolt is in my periscope. Gyro normal landing back is fine. Canopus and Sirius sitting to my left. Retracting scope, firing up. Getting hot up here, Capcom. John Glenn. Splash down into the ocean. Splash down with your chute still open. So handsome in your silver suit. Watching over us.
That was Splashdown, John Glenn by HR Arts Factory. And the musician in charge of that was Simon Banks. He's a musician and composer, and he's based in Canberra. Welcome to the Space Show, Simon.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
What was your role in the creation of this song?
So I was the composer and arranger, and then I work with a team of other professional musicians. And we're all over the place. Our singer, Jamari, is an international, and he sings on the cruise line industry all over the place. Even as we're coming out of COVID, he's just doing a 2-month contract. He's based in Spain, but born in Australia. Then we have a local percussionist, Mitch Fielding, based in Canberra. A mix engineer who's got a commercial studio in Canberra, Kim O'Vennon, and a mastering engineer in Los Angeles, Ron Busted. So my job is to almost be like an administrator, grab the vocal recording, grab the percussion, grab my contribution, guitars and synth, and get that done, and then I go in and produce with Kimo in his studio in Canberra City, and then it's sent off to Ron in LA. So that's the short version of how we do it.
So Jamari wouldn't have had much work on the cruise industry in the past 2 years.
No, but when he was at home, he was actually producing a lot of content out of his home studio, and he in fact put quite a big show together. He has the uncanny ability to be able to change his voice and sing like Elvis or like any of the greats of the 50s, 60s and 70s. So he's put this massive show together. It's not yet been aired, but he was using that time to specifically do that. And I kind of interrupt him and say, look, we've got this song, can you sing on it? Can you please do it? And he'll always oblige. So, you know, we're very lucky to have him because, as you know, without a really, really good, competent vocalist, it's very hard to give life to some of the songs.
And what inspired you to write this song?
Who knows? I mean, really seriously, I'd always loved... you know, what we were doing in space and Australia's role. And one day I just walked up to the, you know, the computer, and I struck an F and a G. And that's, the F is John and the G is Glenn. And that's all I had. That was 5 years ago. So that's how songs start sometimes. It's just this sort of seed of an idea.
Well, the lyrics,
yeah, that's how it happened.
Yeah, the lyrics appear to be fragments of the actual mission transcript.
Yeah, what I did then was that NASA is very good at giving us a history of their space program, and so they've published in conjunction with other parties a whole sound archive of the Mercury program, and they published the complete transcript that they had of the flight. And that's really what fascinated me, and I think that's really why the song came together, because the song was sitting in the transcript, and it was my job, I guess, as a composer artist to draw the, you know, in a song you're only given a few lines of a verse, was to draw the essence out of the 40-page transcript and try and tell a story that could be out there for generations to come. In a way, a song is teasing the next generation and the next generation to go and do the research and learn more about, you know, a fascinating historic event. So our job is to tease the next generation well enough that they might go and want to find out more about it. The other thing to tell you is that I felt a really strong bond with the way that NASA had really come to Australia, put a lot of capital into building the tracking stations. And there were still a few living technicians that are still around. There's the Honeysuckle Creek website, which is a great resource. So I felt a bond with you know, creating a piece of music that Australia could share with the Americans. And so we created a vocal version as well as an instrumental version. The instrumental version has gone off to be treated by an arranger that I have in Los Angeles, and that will come back correctly arranged for use in semi-orchestral and also brass band treatments. So for memorials and for commemoration occasions, you know, it can be used, you know, in an institutional way in the future. So, for instance, the local Australian Space Agency might be able to use, they don't have to use the vocals out of the Glenn, the John Glenn vocals, but they can use the instrumental for, you know, the right occasion.
Is using the actual historical record harder or easier than just writing fanciful lyrics like most of the other songs about John Glenn?
Yeah. And it actually draws, I mean, I'm hoping that primary and secondary school teachers may be able to get some use, and I've already published the sheet music, so it's pretty easy to get hold of it. And I'm hoping that you know, schools in particular will be able to, like choirs, things like that, will be able to sing the song and use it in that way. And that's going to draw them into more the, maybe even in the area of science, discovering, well, how did we have analog technology in the 50s and 60s, and how did we suddenly then go to digital and have the satellite era unfold, and it teaches you to go out and discover all of that. So we want to use the song and the sheet music and start the kids early in primary and secondary schools, so that we hopefully make an offering of them being interested in the whole science of space technology.
Now, you infused several snatches of the actual Mercury Atlas 6 audio. Why did you do that?
Yeah. Well, I think that was critical. I think if you were to take them out, the song is okay, but it's a little bland, and I think it's the spice in the song. I was very attracted to hearing John Glenn's voice. So between the first guitar solo and the second guitar solo, there's a little bridge in the middle with a piano, and we softened it right down percussively and with the piano, and we bumped up John Glenn's voice, and I wanted to have his voice there in perpetuity, almost like the ghost or the angel of John Glenn actually speaking to us. And I thought it was absolutely captivating to hear his voice and to know that he was, 100 miles above Earth, telling us for the very first time what he was seeing and experiencing. And to be able to capture that in a song as a composer, you're only going to get a once-in-a-lifetime crack at being able to do something like that. The fact that, we didn't have to pay $100,000 or something silly, it was freely available as part of the public domain NASA archive. And I just happened to have a song where we could fit it in almost perfectly. And so I think those NASA sound extracts actually are the defining thing in the song, really.
Now, you mentioned that you began writing this 5 years ago. Did it really take you that long?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's kind of weird to describe to people because I've heard of people writing a song in, like the Beatles, some of their songs they wrote in an hour. Paul McCartney had a dream about Let It Be, got up, got to the piano, and he had the song in, 40 minutes. And I don't think it took John Lennon very long to do Imagine either. So for me, it was a matter of keeping coming back to it. And most commercial songs are written somewhere between, 40 to 100 hours. But I kept a log of the time it was taking because it was frustrating. And we spent about 280 hours. And normally, when you track the song, the various tracks, the drums and the bass and the guitar, and all those tracks go in onto your computer software. Normally, you only need maybe 1 or 2 gigabytes maximum. Well, this folder has 12 different 76 gigabytes, which is ridiculous.
Gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So there were many, many drafts then.
Yeah, I over the space of time, I knew it wasn't quite right, and I think what you're taught to do in terms of your own discipline is you're just taught to don't ever release a song until it's ready to go, and I just kept at it over the 5 year period. Leave it for 3 months, come back to it, do a few hours or a few days, and then leave it again, and that's what happened. And when the 60th anniversary came up, that produced a really good time frame to finish the song, get it mixed, get it mastered, get a video clip ready and get it out. And so it kind of galvanised me and the team to get it ready, and luckily we did that. The other thing that I think I reflect on about is that we're going to have a second crack at it because we've only got to hang around to 2032, and we get the 70th anniversary, and we get to roll it out again and do something with that celebration.
Now, we're talking with Simon Banks, a musician from Canberra, about his new song called Splashdown, John Glenn. Now, why did you choose to tell the story from John Glenn's point of view rather than a mission controller's or a journalist's point of view?
Yeah, I can't say. I mean, I think it's because when I was reading the transcript and I'm reading his lines back to Capcom, I wanted to honour the fact that he was completely and utterly aware that he was the first human ever in the Western world to be able to describe He knew how historic it was, and he was describing what he was seeing out the window. It just seemed to me that if I could honour him in that way, that would be perfect. Whereas the chorus, in contrast, is like a normal song. You know, it's just sung splash down into the ocean in the third person. So, it was unusual. And the other thing is that everyone knows of David Bowie's Space Oddity, and I often think of, I say to myself this, what would David do, what would Prince do, and what would Freddie Mercury do? They're the three composers that I think of when I'm composing. So I've always got that backstop. I say, all right, what would David do here? And I go, well, David would have John Glenn singing. So, and we also had this remarkable vocalist in Jamari that I knew he could do that. He can perform theatrically, and I knew he could pull that off, whereas not everyone is going to want to do that or is going to be able to do it in the way that he was able to handle the lyric.
Well, Simon, please tell us about the HR Arts Factory Studio.
Yeah, it's a little home studio that I built in home. We had to get rid of the lounge room and get rid of the dining room. We'll push the furniture to the back of the house. And I'd always had this sort of desire to live in a studio. And I got my wish came true, and I started building it in 2015. I must tell you and listeners that I really did not know what I was doing. And I didn't ever realise that I'd need as much audio cable as I need. but I've shown you a few pictures, Andrew, and you can see that there's actually five workstations. And so, you know, one minute you're the keyboardist, and the next minute you're the bass player, and the next minute you're the sound engineer, and the next minute you're the guitarist. Got these little workstations that you stand up at, and I go through, you know, one minute I'm standing at the piano, next minute the guitar. The guitars sit on stands, so you can just walk up to them. You don't have to put them over your shoulder or anything. And then you'll see, you've seen in the picture, I've got various quite large screens for my ageing eyes, and so you can see everything really clearly. And that's how I compose in that studio. And it's sort of central station, because when Jamari is recording in Spain onto his laptop and his little system, portable system that he's got, he shoots me his vocals over the net, and it's my job to put them in to the main recording software. When Mitch completes his drums, he'll use about 12 tracks, so, you know, snare and on one track and then different cymbals and other tracks, etc. My job is to throw that all into one central software application. We use Logic Pro X, which most musicians and listeners will know of. And it's my job to put all of that together, get the sound balanced, and then we send it off. Or I go with it, in fact, to Kimmo's studio up in the city to do its first mixes, and that process takes several weeks, because most people that have tried to record know that your ears only last for 3 to 4 hours. So, you know, something like this I think took maybe 6 or 7 sessions to mix, and you do 3 or 4 hours at a time. So, you know, you're looking at 25 to 30 hours to mix it. And it gets clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer as you go through the different iterations of the mix.
And what was your aim in setting up this home studio?
Well, I'd always been around music. As I started learning guitar when I was 6, and I've been in and out of the music industry, and I was always fascinated with copyright law. I was a lawyer for a little while, and always fascinated with how copyright works. And, you know, I grew up with a bunch of musicians, and so it's pretty inevitable that I describe modern studios these days as sort of a men's and women's shed. You know, it's like a men's shed. And got to remember that in the 80s, recording studios were so expensive, they were mainly analog, and there's a lot of musicians that had no access whatsoever to really recording. And then the digital revolution came in, suddenly we could record on our computer systems. And so it's democratized the ability to record and given it to the entire world. So what happened was that recording studios moved inside people's houses. And so there's, you know, I bet you there's a quarter of a million home studios sitting in Australia. Most of them we don't even know about. A few of the tradies have come to the front door and pop their head in the front door and get a shock because it just looks like a suburban house from the front. And they put their head in the front door and they go, my God, what's going on in here? You know, so it's quite funny. It's quite amusing.
Yeah. Well, Simon, can we expect any more Australian-based space songs?
Oh, I think so. There's two or three more. I think there'll be another one in 2032 for sure. But I have a few ideas. I'm in touch with a lovely man, a technician that I've only communicated with on the internet so far. But he is one of the leading technicians that was there during the Apollo program and the Mercury program. He's got a site called the Honeysuckle Creek site. He's documenting the history of the tracking stations, and we're talking about collaborating and doing something. I think with some of the stories that he's got to tell. So I think there'll be more to come. And seeing you've got a space program, you're the logical person that we should send them to first.
Yes, and speaking of first, you offered us the world premiere of the song for broadcast.
Right.
How far down the queue are we now that we've left it a week?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure because we had it being aired in Perth on Saturday night for the events over in Perth for the drone show over there, and they were putting projections up on the Perth Airport control tower. So it was played there, and then by Monday we had most of the song shot round community radio as well as commercial radio. As you know, it's really tough to ask to invade the commercial radio space because a lot of the stations are dictated by the multinational top 40 playlists, etc. That's been the case for decades now, and there are reasons that it is that way. So community radio is really where there's more scope to play new material, and so I still think we're somewhere near the top. It's still early days. I think it'll be 12 months to 24 months before we get this track, you know, right round the globe.
Well, Simon, thank you for joining us on the Space Show.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was Simon Banks, a musician and composer based in Canberra. And we're now going to leave you with a full version of his song, Splashdown John Glenn, by HR Arts Factory.
Roger, we have you on that. We'll give you the countdown for retro sequence time, John. You're looking good.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Friendship 7 to Capcom, over. Telemetry is on, over. Cabin pressure is 5.5. I see Aries and Triangulum drifting out of orbit, bringing it back in, switching to fly-by-wire, getting hot up here, over John Glenn. Splashdown
chute still open. So handsome in your silver suit, with your medal of the Flying Cross and the Order of the Aliens. Hope you're still up there, John, watching over us. Ship 7 to Capcom, over. I see Pleiades now, over. A bolt is in my periscope. Gyro normal landing back is fine. Cannabis and Sirius sitting to my left. Retracting scope firing up. Getting hot up here, Capcom. John Glenn. Splash down into the ocean. Splash down with your chute still open. So handsome in your silver suit. Watching over us.
That was Splashdown John Glenn by the HR Arts Factory, released just a week ago from Canberra in Australia. And you can purchase that online. So just Google or whatever your favourite search engine is, Splashdown John Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, and you'll find it there and you can purchase it online. Well, this is the Space Show. More about John Glenn coming up.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
Where you're listening to the Space Show. We are marking the 60th anniversary of the first orbital flight by a United States citizen. Now, John Glenn is the oldest person to orbit the Earth to date. I say orbit. In 1962, he was considered amazingly old at the age of 40. After all, Yuri Gagarin had been 27 years old and German Titov 25 years old when they made their space flights. Well, to date, the median age of all space travellers is 44 years for males and 42 years for females. So John Glenn at 40 wasn't all that old after all. And by the way, German Titov is still the youngest person to have orbited the Earth. In 1998, just 4 months before he flew with John Glenn aboard the space shuttle mission STS-95, Scott Parazynski visited Melbourne. His talk to the students of the McRobertson Girls High School in South Melbourne is on our Space Show website. That's space.southernfm.com.au. So you can find it, space.southernfm.com.au. In 2010, I caught up with Scott at the Kennedy Space Center, and we had a nice little chat, and he told me that he'd climbed Mount Everest in the interim, as well as having flown with John Glenn. So here we go with John Glenn's memories of how communications have changed over the years since he was a little boy.
I've told people sometimes an example. Back when I was, when we were kids in New Concord, this would be back in the 30s and 40s, the telephone system there was a central, and you picked up and you ground this thing and got the attention of the central, and then gave her your number, and Annie's number was 3134. I still remember it. And she would then put this out on a party line that had five or six different subscribers on that line and put out the coded number of rings, whatever it was, for Annie's number. Now that's, then later on they went to dial phones and so on, but I remember that very, very well, that those were that was the first communication around New Concord. Now contrast that now. I was sitting in my office here one day, several years ago now, but I get a call on my cell phone, and it rings, and I answered the thing, and I said hello, and it said, "This is Scott, or John, this is Scott in space." Well, it was Scott Parazynski, who had I'd been on a flight with in 1998, and he was on another flight, and he's on the far side of the Earth, traveling at almost 5 miles a second, 17,500 miles an hour, almost 5 miles a second, and he had a little time between the projects up here and just thought he'd call. And his signal then, and we talked for maybe 20 minutes, and his signal goes from the spacecraft to the TDRS, which is a technical data relay satellite, and then down to Houston, up to, on landline then, to the local system here, and then out on cell phones, and I answer it and sit in my office and talk to him, and that's how far we've come with things like communications, and it's just unbelievable. That's where research and the type of research you can do in the space program that is so unique is benefits everybody. I just if we ever lose our curiosity, our research, capability, then we've lost what has built this country, and I believe that.
That was John Glenn speaking with the Ohio Oral History Project. As I said, John Glenn, at the age of 77, flew in space again for the second time. They wouldn't let him fly after his first space mission. But many people were making jokes about him flying. There were two doctors on his mission. There was Scott Parazynski, who was a medical doctor, and there's also, I think it was Chakai Mukai, who was also a medical doctor. But NASA said, no, it's just a coincidence that a 77-year-old's flying with two doctors. Well, here is a comedian called Joe Rogan, who's been in the news recently, and he's talking about, well, he's making a joke about John Glenn flying at the age of 77.
God bless that John Glenn, huh? 77 years old. 77 flies into space. I love that. That's a man. And plus, I love that because that gives me ammunition against all douchebags that are always complaining.
I'm like, well, about when you got to be my age?
John Glenn, he's flying around the planet. You're breaking your hip every time you brush your teeth, you wrinkled old...
You don't understand. When you get to be my age, you gotta move! Do something, do some squats, walk around the block!
You wonder why you're tired all the time?
Oh, that goddamn John Glenn raising the bar.
Damn it, I had it good.
Respect for your elders. Respect me.
Hey, look at my acting. So I've had so many old people come up. Like, old people are funny, man. Some old people are really cool. But other old people, they come up to me after the show, you need to listen to me. If I knew you when you were 20, I would hate you then. You just survived. Have respect for everybody. You don't like my act? Who's the idiot? You sat through it for an hour, you stupid piece of... Didn't you figure out what it was all about after 5 minutes? What, do you think I was going to bust out Christian songs after the first 15? Come on, we're different. Now go home and... I don't want to hear it. There's old people that are great. We're all just people. You respect everyone. Respect kids.
And that was Joe Rogan. Well, there are many, many songs about John Glenn, and this one is called Everything Is Go, and it's by Cab K. Now, Cab comes from the United Kingdom and Ghana. And I'd point out that although there was no Mercury tracking station in Ghana, there was one in Kano in nearby Nigeria. So here we go with Everything Is Go.
Go, 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 I want you to know. Go, 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 everything is go. Go, 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 everything is A-OK. Up and up and around, miles above the ground. Round and round it flies, peace in the stars in the skies. Go, 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 he happened to say. Go, 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 jungle of the USA.
Cab K from the United Kingdom and Ghana, everything is go. And I just point out that that phrase, A-OK, was not said by the astronauts. It was made up by Shorty Powers, the public affairs officer at Cape Canaveral. So it's not an astronaut saying.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.